Auto insurance can all seem the same until it comes time to use it. So don't get stuck paying more for less coverage. Switch to USAA Auto Insurance and you could start saving money in no time. Get a quote today. Restrictions apply.
All right, you guys, we are back. Finally, the off season went way longer than we expected. I apologize, back by popular demand. And I'm able to carve out some free time. Temple of Hoop is back. I appreciate all the love, all the DMs, messages you guys asking for it. We here. We're going to give it to you as long as often as we can. Quick update. Brother Kingsley, you guys know his account got suspended. He is still the co-host of this pod until he gets back, gets right, gets some time. He will be back joining me. Until then, I've invited a bunch of my favorite people to come talk hoop with me from different angles, analytics guys, gambling guys, coaches. I have guys just cycling through for a few episodes at a time. My first guest, I've been arguing with this dude on the internet about sports for about a good 6-7 years now. Jordan Latz from Taproom Sports. Jordan, what's going on, man? Good to have you, bro. Thank you for coming in.
Yeah, man. Thank you for having me. It's going to be tough filling in for Kings, dude. Filling up, man. You know what I mean? But I'm glad to be here, bro. I'm glad, like you said, we've been arguing for like 10 years, the decade at least, bro.
For sure, for sure. Just so many different sports. We butt heads, you know, baseball, A's and Mariners, same division. Cowboys and Cardinals played a big game last year in the late regular season. So, you know. A lot of stuff to argue about. But you specifically, I know you do analyze sports, but more so from a sports gambling standpoint. So just tell the listeners kind of what you do before we get rolling for real.
Yeah, man. So I'm the host of Taproom Sports Podcast, and it's basically, if you're a degenerate, it's definitely something that you'll be into. I mean, let's be honest. I always tell people winning – gambling and sports gambling is very difficult. You know what I mean? Like the best sports gamblers in the world only hit like 57% of their bets, and that's profitable, right? So, we're just trying to give good information and more importantly, just trying to be a little entertaining, whether we win or lose, you know what I mean? And we poke fun at each other, right? So, it happens, man. We all win, we all lose, you know what I'm saying? So, yeah, I mean, I've been doing this for a while. I got serious into sports gambling the last couple of years. And basketball, specifically college basketball, is probably my best handicap expertise. But, NBA is obviously one of my favorites, and it's up there as well.
I saw you were the NCAA tournament. You were on fire. I remember. NCAA tournament. I remember you had the parlays rolling for March Madness. Just real quick before we get into the NBA, just what I see, the defense looks really bad. From what I'm looking at, these scores all around and the games I've watched, what do you see from a gambling sense? Are there a lot of overs, or are the over under naturally high, or how's that working from the gambling side? What trends, other trends do you see?
Yeah, I mean, the defense is, it's funny because last year it was like the total opposite. Like the year started very slow, because they had that implemented that rule where like they weren't going to call fouls on the
right?
So we were seeing a lot lower scoring games. We're seeing horrendous shooting. I mean, last year, 3-point shooting was down from the last like 20, 30 years. Total opposite this year. I mean, we're seeing overs hit 56%, which is huge. So your eyes don't deceive you. We are seeing a lot of high scoring games. And a lot of that's because the refs have been pulled back into this, foul merchant hunting, dude.
I watched the 76ers game the other night. The last 4 minutes, it was just Harden and Embiid just throwing themselves all over the floor. I was like, this is not basketball. But yeah, that the eye test definitely matches the data you have. Go ahead, bro.
You're right, dude. The Sixers are one of the most unwatchable teams, bro. Like, absolutely. But, we are seeing some teams play defense. And it's funny because, like, obviously, you know, I'm a Bucks fan, right? And,
right,
you know, last year I felt like the Bucks just, like, they didn't start taking the season seriously till, like, March. And I think it ultimately hurt them last year, right? Because they really didn't lock in defensively till, like, the playoffs. You know, they were atrocious defensively last year. They were the worst defensive team defending the three-point line last year.
I remember that. A lot of that. We'll get into the Bucks, too. Definitely a team I want to talk about. But a lot of us are scheme, though, right? That big – I heard that Bud was showing a little more variance this year.
Yeah.
We've seen a couple of the games. It looked like he's showing a little more variance as far as their pick and roll and help coverages to try to not give as many threes up, because he killed them against Boston in the playoffs.
He was also last year, so. The right guys too, like Javon Carter, for example.
Okay. You know,
he wasn't getting any minutes, and what does he do best? He plays defense, right? So,
right.
And obviously, they know, like, we don't have Chris out, we don't have Chris here, we don't have Pat, we don't have Joe Ingles. Like, we're gonna have to lock down defensively. That's the only way we're gonna win games right now. And then just let Giannis be Giannis.
I was about to say, it helps having the best player in the world. That covers up a lot. But let's get into this season, man. More specifically, obviously the big story of the NBA year so far. Nets and Lakers combined 2-10. Lakers finally got their first win tonight, defeating the Nuggets. Finally made some threes, 13 threes, season high. Let's start with the Lakers. So before the season started, I had them barely missing or 10th in the West. That was my initial prediction for the Lakers. Even that seems optimistic now. Tonight, you know, they beat a good Nuggets team. I saw Mike Malone really was harping about how they stink defensively on the road this year, which has been the case. They give it up 130. He went down all the numbers about how terrible they are defensively on the road. But that's a good win for the Lakers. Where they are, and you take anyone at this point, regardless of who the opponent is and who they're missing. My thing with the Lakers before I even saw them play a game, this is the worst shooting team in the NBA, and it literally was the worst shooting team in NBA history for a minute. It was tracking that way. The other thing was, I am going to be on the Darvin Ham defense team this season. There's no way you can judge Darvin Ham with this roster. Everybody should be looking at Jeannie Buss and Rob Pelinka, extremely funny and sideways. LeBron, obviously not what he was if you watch closely, but he's still a damn good player. In AD, I'm worried about the back. He's still even moving a little stiff tonight, but those two are good enough to invest more than what the Lakers put in around him. Like, it's almost kind of embarrassing what Pelinka assembled around them for this season. So it's hard for me to really judge Darvin Ham. People are trying to talk about lineups are like, what five-man combinations he wants to put? They want him to put a positive five-man combination on the floor the entire 48 minutes with that roster. It doesn't work.
Yeah.
AD and Bron got a rest. Everybody in the rotation isn't good. You don't know what Westbrook you're getting night to night. He was – the two games off the bench, he's played really well. They won one, lost, so I'll give that. Off the bench, he's okay. He's embraced it, so I think we'll have to keep an eye on that. The Lakers are going to wait 20 games, they said, before they – decide if they want to make a trade or not. I'm sure that's involving Westbrook and the two picks they have, which would be the
2027,
the last valuable assets they really control. So yeah, that's a big, you know, that's a big gamble to take if they do it. So we'll see what happens. Just what are your thoughts on the Lakers so far? You know, as a Bucks fan outside looking in, you no emotion involved.
Oh, I mean, I think you hit the nail on the head. You know, as far as the worst shooting team, I mean, through four games, there had not been a worse three-point shooting
team in
the history of the NBA, right? So, and we're talking not only the first four games, we're talking any four-game stretch of any team in the history. No one's ever shot that poorly. So I think you're right about that. And I think they're asking LeBron to do a little too much, and he obviously can't do that at this age, especially defensively. And I mean, to be honest, dude, like, I like LeBron, but I feel like he's, like, checked out from winning. Like, he literally just wants to break Kareem's record at this point, dude. Like, I don't think he cares about winning that much. And part of that might be because of what you said about Rob Pelinka and how he put this team around him. But, you know, that the Lakers have issues, and it starts at the top, right? They have too many talking heads. Like, why does Kurt Rambis have say on the roster? Like, what is going on with this franchise? Like, that there's too many people with opinions, and everybody wants to blame LeBron for getting Westbrook. But that was his guy, you know what I mean? Like, any player is going to be like, hey, I want my guy. But there should be someone in position to say, hey, LeBron, I don't think that's a good idea. But they don't have that.
Yeah, I saw somebody was like, so there's a build around LeBron handbook, and it's like chapter one, page one, get shooting.
Yeah, it's like seriously, dude. Like, that's what you need. Like, all the teams he succeeded with. He's got Mike Miller, Shane Battier, J.R. Smith, you know, Kyrie Irving, Kevin Love, right? He needs shit around him. He needs space, and he doesn't have that here. I don't know what the fuck they were thinking, dude. Sorry, I don't know if I could cuss on you.
Now, this is for the kids. Try to keep it light. We ain't going to bleep you, but this is for the kids, baby. This is for the kids. Temple Loop for the kids.
My bad. This was just a horribly constructed team. I think you're right. 10th it seems about right for me. They're just so bad offensively, and they don't have an identity. Like, what is their identity as a team?
I will say this for Ham has them defending. You know, a lot of that is related. They're getting some insane defensive shooting luck. I'll see if that holds. But, you know, through six games, they remain a top five defensive rated team. So I have to keep an eye on that. So, yeah, I think that'll have to be their identity. I think they want to keep games close and just give LeBron and AD a chance to be great late in games with their defense. I think that's going to be their blueprint. I don't know how sustainable that is with the level of shooting and skill throughout the whole Western Conference over the course. And we don't know how many games AD and LeBron are going to play. I said if it gets below, they end up playing below 60 games, the season gets real dicey. You know what I mean? And you got to be careful because – New Orleans does own the right to swap. They have a swap for this year, and they can choose either the 24 or 25 pick to take outright, and then that'll be the end of the Anthony Davis trade.
I saw someone on Twitter saying that how great would it be if the Pelicans just said, oh, hey, we don't want to swap this year, and the Lakers get the one.
That's just too much. The whole way that the AD kind of got punked in the trade in the Lakers AD, there's no goodwill whatsoever. Between the Lakers and Pelicans. What do you see as far as Anthony Davis? I think he's really been really active defensively. I just think his body's starting to betray him. And it's kind of sad because he's only 28, 29. I think that's a little scary for his future.
Yeah, I mean, like, you know, when you think about big men in the NBA, they don't usually last very long, right? Their shelf life isn't very sustainable. Like, we saw Yao break down, and I'm not saying Anthony Davis is Yao.
Right.
He's a lot more limb, but you know, he did have like a huge growth spurt in high school, like very quickly. I think he grew like 8 or 9 inches in the
summer. Yeah.
And that's like, the human body's not supposed to grow like that, right? So usually guys like that usually do tend to have some injuries along the way. The good thing is that like, he doesn't really have foot injuries, you know, and that's usually the worst case scenario for big guys. But I mean, a back definitely isn't good. He's got, I don't know, because like, he's just so fragile. It's like, not even like he could change the way he plays because he can't shoot. Right. And he works with a lethal shooter. And for some reason, everybody that works with lethal shooter becomes a worse shooter.
I'll say this. There have been a couple, you know, people celebrate this. I'm kind of male on a lethal shooter, whatever. There have been a couple guys he worked with that got really, like, you work with Grant Williams, and Grant Williams percentage just shot up. Poppy Portis. So it's like, there have been a couple guys that have gotten a lot better. So, you know, I'm going to shoot him some bail just to be devil's advocate, but I get the gist of what you're saying.
No. Please. Let's not go there.
But AD shooting has been just a mystery because in the bubble, he literally shot like Kevin Durant in the bubble. Like, the splits are like, he looks like they traded for a 6'10 defensive player of the year, Kevin Durant. That's what the splits look like in the bubble. So
he's a top three player in the league.
Right.
You know, outside of injuries, that's the AD they need to be successful. And I think that's the AD they were banking on continuing, right? And he just wasn't that guy.
Yeah, I think I thought the best explanation for the evaluation of that entire trade is you got your championship. You know, that's ultimately the end game. But the Lakers were trading also for a bridge to the next, you know, era of superstar. That's what they do. They look through the 80s. There's always a bridge to the next star. And I think they were hoping Anthony Davis would be that. And I just don't know if it's going to come to fruition. I think most of it is he's not a creator. Right. You know what I mean? Even Shaq was a post-up guy, but you had to double him or he's going to put your whole team in foul trouble. So he essentially became an offensive hub. You know what I mean? And I just don't think, you know, AD is that. So I think, you know, they have to reevaluate how they build the roster around him, or even if he wants to stay, you know, after LeBron leaves, you know, given it with how Pelinka and Genie have built the team. Is that something you want to, you know, tie the remainder of your prime to, you know, as a top tier player, you know what I mean? So
yeah,
we'll see how that goes.
If you're running the Lakers, right, how would you approach this situation?
Well, I put it out there. If they lose 50-plus games, I'm approaching LeBron and AD. I was like, just give us a list of destinations. This isn't working. We don't have the cap maneuverability to bring in guys around you. We need to just retool and blow everything up. You know, that's what I would approach them with. But I also know that there's a business side to it. LeBron's going to sell out every arena till he retires. AD moves units, and he's also clutch, so he's tied to LeBron. So I get that. What I think they'll do is they have $35 million in cap space. If they don't move Westbrook or don't take any salary on in any deals, they'll have $35 million in cap space. I think they'll use that to try to build a more effective roster. Have more than one, you know, NBA replacement level wing on the roster. I saw Troy Brown in Chicago last year. No, I'll try to get a wing and just a bunch of shooting around him, you know, and try to, you know, hit on another undrafted free agent. I think, you know, the Lakers scouting department remains A1. That's the one part of the front office. I think that's amazing. Like, Reeves is a legit NBA player and he's undrafted free agent. Like, you have to, you know, when you're cash trapped, you have to hit on things like that. So I think they do a good job of doing drafting late and scouting, finding gems. But I think what it is, Rob just doesn't have connections to sign guys.
Well, I think a lot of I don't know if this is true. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I read somewhere that like a lot of GMs don't really want to work with him. Like they look at him like a fucking they look at him like a rat.
Well, it's that. You know, I've heard similar things too. You know, nothing really substantiated. It's just that you look at it, three-fourths or four-fifths of the Lakers roster is clutch clients. So it's like you're asking Rob, well, what connections do you have? Who can you, you know, can you get out of this umbrella and bring the Lakers the players they need? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that'll be the test going forward.
This is NASCAR driver Tony Breidinger inviting you to make a pit stop at Raising Cane's for craveable, hand-battered, cooked-to-order chicken fingers.
Chicken up.
Crispy, crinkle-cut fries.
Hot potato coming through.
Buttery Texas toast.
Toast walking.
And secret Cane's sauce.
Topping off now.
Turbocharge your chicken fingers and get them even faster when you order online or with the Raising Cane's app.
Go, go, go!
Raising Cane's chicken fingers. One love. Raising Cane's is not affiliated with NASCAR.
Let's move on to the Nets.
All
right. I think their situation is a little more tricky. There's a lot of non-basketball stuff feeding into I think what we're seeing on the court.
Well, they are trash defensively.
Yeah, that too. I think they just don't have any inside presence whatsoever. I think Claxton is better off as a rotation guy, but he's like their starting center. I think they get killed inside every game. Katie didn't want to be there. Josiah didn't like any of the offers. Didn't feel they were of value to a player. Love Kevin Durant's caliber. Couldn't bust a move. They had a meeting. KD decides to stay. Kyrie's doing whatever. I'm not going to go into any of that stuff. This is a basketball podcast, whatever. I'm not going to, you know, go into that. But it's distracting, obviously. They don't defend well. Here's the thing. I don't like criticizing coaches. I'm trying to be one myself at a lower level. I know how difficult it can be, especially at that level. I don't know if a first-time coach with no bench experience should have been put in a championship or bust situation. Like, I could see if Steve Nash had bench experience. He had no bench experience. He was a development guy with the Warriors, didn't even go to games. Yep. He worked with guys on skill work, and he went from that to a head coach.
But he was also the guy that KD wanted.
Yeah, in a championship or bust situation. I think what KD's thing was, I think it was too wild in OKC. He wanted some more structure. Ended up deciding that he hated Kerr's offense, decided that he didn't like playing in Kerr's offense. despite the fact they were running. Yeah, before they ran through the league. And then now it's like I'm back to no structure whatsoever. I will say, I think Steve Nash draws up a nice ATO. Like when they come out of timeouts, he has nice little sets to drop to get them a look. Outside of that, there's just not much structure with what they do. It's a lot of like the offense is Kyrie, Kev, go be great.
But that's what they want. That's what both those guys wanted, right?
I don't know. I don't know. I like I said, you know, you hear things, but that's not, I don't know. But I just, from what I see, that's all, you know.
I feel like, you know, the coach is always the easiest scapegoat because he's the easiest guy to get rid of, right?
Yeah.
Like, you can't just get rid of players. You're paying them way too much money. So, you know, Kevin Durant literally wanted Steve Nash. Like, that was his guy. You know, he trained with Steve Nash in the off seasons, right? In his documentary, when he's coming back from the foot injury, like, he's working out with Steve Nash and Dirk Nowitzki in the off season. So he already had, like, a connection with Steve. And then now it's like, and I agree with you, Steve Nash probably wasn't the best coach for this situation at all. He'd never been in this situation. And, you know, I think Kevin and Kyrie probably went to the front office and were like, this is the guy we want. Why did they want him? Well, Kyrie said it right after. You know, I don't think we have a head coach. I mean, this whole situation, and I don't mean to harp on Kyrie, and like you said, like the stuff that's going on right now, like I don't know that much about, so I'm not going to put my 2 cents in. But you said it the other day. You were like, you know, I think Kyrie's going to hang him up soon because he's over. Like, he just wants to play basketball. But obviously, as a basketball player, you have this other part of your job that you have to deal with, and that's like media. And you're on a big stage, right? You're
right.
Millions of people. And like, he doesn't want that, obviously. Like, he just wants to be, like, he keeps saying, like, I'm a human. And yes, you are a human, but you have to understand, like, you're going to get asked these questions. These people are doing their jobs, right? And the next situation is totally outside of basketball. Yeah.
My only counter to that is, real quick, I don't want to harp on, like I said, I like the on-court stuff. I think the media has to decide whether they want more than an athlete or shut up and dribble. You know, because when they do things like that, they invite these, you know, kind of wild opinions, and they want these guys to go into, hey, be more than an athlete. You know what I mean? And then these guys who are obviously not educated on a lot of things end up, you know, having to put their foot in their mouth and, you know, maybe making the league look bad on certain issues. So that's all I'll say about that. The media needs to just decide what they want from these guys. I think that is a huge issue all this, or a layered issue with all this. Like, you got to decide, do you want these guys to speak up or not? Because you're not going to say everything you want them to say. So you got to make a decision. Either I'm going to ask these guys basketball questions or try to, you know, hold these guys at the same standards as, you know, our elected officials. You know what I mean? So I think that's the big issue from there.
I agree.
Ben Simmons.
Oof. It's gonna take him a while.
Yeah, that's a part of it. I just that's fine, and I agree with that. I just, the temperament hasn't changed, and that's the thing for me. Like, I get it. Like, so let's take Jamal Murray, for instance, right? You can see his body's not all the way back yet, but the aggression's there. He's like, oh, okay, he just got to get his rhythm back. His legs are gonna come back. Ben's playing the exact same player we saw pass up that layup with Trae Young on him in the playoffs.
Yep.
Not staring at the rim, not being in attack mode, despite very gifted physically, not taking advantage. And it's really killing the net spacing.
So let me ask
you, out there.
Let me ask you this. Do you think Ben Simmons even likes basketball?
Yeah, I mean, I've seen him be dominant at the high school and college level. Like, that year at LSU.
You think he loves basketball? Because he has not gotten better at all.
You know what? We don't see these guys, and obviously we don't know their mental struggles. That is legitimately fair, because I'll say this. The guy drafted directly behind Ben Simmons was Brandon Ingram, and we see him go leaps and bounds every year in his individual game. And the gap of them two was like, Ben was here, Brandon was here, and it's like, it's here now.
Someone in the media, might have been Richard Jefferson, but he said, majority of the players in the NBA don't love basketball.
Yeah, like, I remember that was one of the things Kobe harped on. Kobe's he's like, his biggest shock was the players didn't love, like most of the players didn't love basketball. Like it was a job for them.
Yeah.
And that's fine when you get, you know, highly paid in the macro, you get highly paid. What's your motivation at that point? Like I've worked my tail off to get here. The checks are clear. My family's taken care of. You know, I think that's what separates, you know, guys that at that top tier level, the LeBrons, the MJs, the Kobes. It's like, yeah, I got all this money, all this fame, but there's more to it. I want to be the best ever. I think that's what separates guys like that. Now you see it with Giannis. He's just never satisfied.
Yeah, but I mean, like, there's role players too that like continue to get better and like they do their role really well and they love that.
Yeah.
But then you have guys like Ben Simmons where it's like, the guy has all the talent in the world, all the physical tools, right? And we've seen it. We saw it when he first came into the league, right?
Right.
We knew he would, could. He had this unlimited, untapped potential. And so he's never grown. He's only regressed.
Yeah. Again, I think he had a couple bad playoff runs. I think that just stick with him.
Man, Philly just destroys people, dude.
So it's like, I don't know. Like, I just Ben was one of those guys I used to defend. He was one of the guys I used to, like.
Yeah, you were all – dude, you – you even said that you would take him over Brandon Ingram.
Yeah, I remember I said early. I was like, if the Lakers don't get Ben Simmons, just trade the second pick. Remember I said that? I was like, get DeMarcus Cousins. And then, you know, because Delson Boogie was in sack going crazy, losing there. I was like, just trade him for DeMarcus Cousins. But yeah, man, it's just, it's important that we don't see him day to day. We don't know his mental struggles or what he tries to do. But yeah, man, it's just, you know, it's unfortunate that he hasn't been able to get any better. You see, I think Ingram was right behind him. Jaylen Brown was a couple picks after. And you see the growth those two have shown, you know, and it's kind of, it's just strange, no doubt. I think it's definitely fair for you to ask that, you know, what does he work on in the offseason question? You know, it's people can say how disrespectful it is, you're not there, but it's fair to ask that question given the production that we've seen at this point in time.
Yeah, and I don't want to assume anything. I just wanted to ask the question.
Right. I understand. I didn't take it that way. I'm just, you know, I'm saying we just don't know. You know what I mean? And apparently he's had a lot of mental health issues with basketball. So we'll see.
Do you think that they could right the ship?
You know, it's crazy. I got Charlie Brown with the football, man. I picked Nets to come out the East, bro. I don't know why. Like, I was regretting it a week later. I watched it for a week, and I was like, why the hell?
It's still early in the season.
It's still early. They still have Kevin Durant. We'll see, man. There's going to be a shakeup. So I think there's going to be a trade or a coaching change, and I think that'll decide however they respond to whatever change it is. That'll decide how their season goes. I honestly think they need to do with Ben Simmons what the Lakers did with Westbrook, just bring him off the bench. They just keep the floor space for Kai and Kev and see, you know, how that works. I think they do need Ben defensively. So, I don't know what the
defensive end.
Right. Sure. Let's go into the rest of the league. Enough with the negativity. it's kind of weird though, right? The old guards like struggling here, you know,
be a shift in the league.
Yeah. It's just, even the Warriors are kind of in the mud a little bit. Lakers 1-5, Nets 1-5, as we mentioned, got a lot of teams with, you know, vets that we grew up with as superstars that are struggling. So that's funny. It might be like a changing of the guard, you know, type year. Biggest surprise for you, you know, players, teams, you know, things that have caught your eye, you know, in this very early part of the season, not even a tenth of the way done. Well, anything you've seen?
Portland Trailblazers, for sure. They are leaps and bounds better than I thought they were going to be. I had questions about their roster coming into the season, like how Jeremy Grant was going to fit. But Anfernee Simons is a legitimate all-star guard in this league. And then Dame, before he got hurt, I mean, Dame was scorching hot, 31 points a game, shooting 50-40 from the floor. So we're going to see how they fare without him the next couple of weeks, because they did lose their one game that he didn't start. So
right,
we do have to see how this is going to play out. But I do like what I see from Portland, man. And I messaged you the other day and I was like, please talk me out of betting Chauncey Billups. they could very well be the fifth best team in the West.
They got to keep Dame upright. You know, that's the thing. I think the biggest thing Portland is, I think for – I was talking to – what's my guy? I gotta look him up, but he you know, runs a Portland, you know, blog and podcast, you know, media. I should have done this 3 years ago.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? With CJ, they finally got a bunch of athletic wings to, you know, put around Dame, some shooting. I never love Nurkic. I think they gotta move off him. But you know, Shaedon Sharpe, Jeremy Grant, Josh Hart is essentially a smaller wing. You got Gary Payton,
Jabari Walker.
Right. They got a bunch of, you know, just very switchy and athletic guys around Dame to give them at least a defensive identity to protect Dame and some versatility and some guys who can slash to the basket offensively. Yep. And I think that's given them a much better identity than they had with just Dame and CJ. We're just going to outskill you and try to shoot you into oblivion, and that which never worked.
I don't want to say this because I know you're a Pelicans guy, but dude, give me Anthony Simons over CJ McCollum all day, 7 days a week.
Well, I think with the age and everything, that's fine. I think both teams got what they wanted. So here's with Portland, they're transitioning out of that era, and they saw that Simons was ready. I think the Pelicans, they need a vet for those young guys to follow. So I think that worked out for everybody. I think it's one of those win-win situations. You know what I mean?
Yep.
Portland also got Josh Hart in the deal. You know what I mean? He's been a godsend for Portland. Yeah. Again, versatile guy who can guard, you know, 2 through 4, even depending on the matchup. Probably best rebounding guard in the NBA. You know, can hit threes and push the pace. So I think that's one of those trades that works out for both teams, I think. So both teams got what they wanted out of that deal. Portland's a good one.
Yeah, and I like what I've seen from Portland, man. I think that they're going to be a really good team this year.
Yeah, for me, it's weird. I got to go with the Spurs and the Jazz, man. I thought those teams would be Wimby hunting, but you know, Pop is like, nah. I'm gonna let these young guys play.
Coaches do their best work, though.
Yeah, I think that's when you find out about them. I think like NBA is like the technically like in the macro NBA coaches should be the best coaches in the world, right? So I think you see them do their best work when they're up against it. They have to be a little more creative, think about getting guys in spots, pay more attention to detail, and you got to develop your young guys too. And I think Pop is doing that well.
Let me ask you something real quick because I know you're a coach.
Yeah.
Do you think that, like, because, you know, as a college basketball guy, I always feel like, you know, college basketball, the coaches are the stars because it's a lot more scheme oriented, right?
Right.
Whereas I feel the NBA, the coaches are more like massaging egos and managing personalities. Would you say that's fair?
Yeah, but I think the best coaches do both. So I look at it like this. So I think Phil and Pop are the two greatest coaches ever. I think, you know, Pop tactically wise, but Phil got the most important part of the job down, which is managing egos. He got two shot hunters, Kobe and Mike, to buy fully into the triangle and give themselves to the triangle. I don't care what Kobe and Shaq said after their career. They absolutely hated each other. He got them to coexist for 3 championships, so it just couldn't happen anymore. Remember, he wrote that book and just pretty much tore Kobe to bits, and he was able to mend that relationship and coach him to 2 more championships. You know what I mean? So I think Phil just managed personalities and just brought everybody together better than any coach I've ever seen. So I think that speaks to your point, really. You got to massage egos. But I also think, like, the triangle in this time was very innovative. It took advantage of the illegal defense rules by putting your best player out in space, and you couldn't full out double or trap without breaking the rules. You know what I mean? Yep. And I think that it was very innovative for the time. And I think Pop, with the pace and space and the movement, like the Warriors have taken it to another level, but the foundation of that offense was Popovich in San Antonio. You know what I mean? So.
And Mike D'Antoni.
I don't think the Warriors do as much pick and roll and like high ISO and stuff, but yeah, I think the concept, like, you know, the movement and stuff. Yeah. But the Warriors don't jack threes up like that. It's weird because they have the 2 best shooters ever, but their 3-point rate is like average, which is crazy.
I agree. Well, plus, like, you know, they have, like, outside of the 2 best 3-point shooters, they usually they're like the only 2 3-point shooters on the floor, which is
right. That's true. Yeah, that's true.
But it just so happens to be the two best, and Curry just shoots 40 feet, so like extends the defense out even more.
Right.
And I agree. Like, because that's the crazy thing about the NBA to me is like the I just feel like because Mike Budenholzer, for example, like schematically, I mean, you see me complain about him time and time again. And while I do think he's gotten better, he's such a good coach at like managing personalities. Like they bring in Bobby Portis, and Bobby Portis was always considered like a problem everywhere he went, right?
Knocking cats out.
Yeah, and then he fits in, right? I mean, it helps having Giannis there, but that's the thing is like he immediately gets Giannis to buy in, and then Giannis is the hardest worker on the team, so the team's like, okay, we gotta buy in too.
Yeah, you know what? Yeah, I also think the Bucks surprised me. Your Bucks surprised me too, bro. I thought it would be a little muddy out the gate without Chris, Ingles, a lot of injuries, but Giannis, man, I just. All due respect to Joker and Luka, there's just not one player who impacts both ends of the floor like him on a night-to-night basis. And for that reason alone, he just isn't – I don't think since LeBron's prime, there hasn't been a player with that tight of a chokehold on, like, the I'm the best in the world title since LeBron in his prime.
Ooh, shoot. All right. I like it.
I think he's so much – like. He's in a class of his own. Like, nobody dominates both ends of the floor like him.
Yeah, no, I agree.
I agree. Yeah, I think in his motor, he just keeps coming, just his motor. I watched that Nets game. They look like they have him under wraps. And then he just second half throws for 30. You know, it's just like
easily, too.
Yeah. And it's like all this, like, Ben Simmons can control him and keep him under wraps. And it's like, no.
I think he took that personally.
Yeah. All right, so a little bit of off-court news that surfaced for Woj. So the owners and the next CBA are pushing for a hard luxury tax cap. So there's only so much, like, right now you can go over as much as you want, but you got to foot the bill, and then it multiplies every year. Because of the Warriors, Clippers, Nets, the owners feel like they're at a competitive disadvantage. They want to put a cap on that number. How do you feel about that?
I mean, I think it's a terrible. I've always felt sports should be a total free market like baseball. You know what I mean? Like, because in no universe is Mike Conley making more money than LeBron at any point in their careers other than the NBA. And that's the problem with the NBA is like they have these benchmarks where players automatically get a certain amount of money, a percentage increase, right? So like Draymond Green, for example, gets, because he's made an all-star team and he's been a defensive player of the year.
Right.
He's automatically minimum. He can only make a certain amount. So it already puts teams at a, it already puts it at a, you're in a hard place, right?
Right.
Whereas if teams are negotiating a free market, you know, you're not going to see I'm just going to throw a name out there, like a Josh Hart make $25 million.
Right.
You know, and you're not going to see Giannis make less than, a mid-tier all-star. I know that sounds funny, but like a guy that's an all-star, but he's not the best player.
Right. So I get that. I think the superstar players in the NBA, they definitely, you know, sacrificed for the better of the league to make sure everybody can get, you know, a lot of money. So I'll give the superstar players in the NBA, you know, I think they definitely could have pushed like, hey, if somebody wants to give LeBron James $87 million in one season to sign there, that don't put a market on us. But yeah, I think the star players definitely, you know, took a pay cut in the negotiations. My thing is, as far as the hard cap, I just, first of all, you know, Joe Lacob is not even like the Warriors ownership group. They're not even top 10 as far as like richest owners.
Yeah,
no, they just choose to like heavily invest in the team, which is why I my sympathy level for the other owners is at zero.
Yeah,
it's like If you want to do this, like, you got to pay to win. Like, the good players cost. My only rebuttal of the players should rebuttal is, like, if a team drafts me, my cap hit should not count against the luxury tax. If they develop me to a certain point where they want to keep me, we're not going to punish that. Don't punish that team for being having a great development system. Like, yeah, Memphis is going to have some terrible decisions to make in a couple years. Like, but they hit drafts out the park, yep, and they're going to have to pay for it in a few years. I don't think that's right. I don't think drafted players should count towards your cap hit. Yeah, I don't know. How do you feel about that theory?
No, I like that. And I also think that, you know, there's no way the NBAPA is going to backtrack from fully guaranteed contracts. But there should be a way that, remember when in 2012, when they did the new CBA, and for like the first like 3 years or something, every team had a provision so they could waive a player and stretch it out and it didn't hit against their cap, one player.
Yeah. Amnesty clause.
Yeah, the amnesty clause. Yeah. They should have something similar to that where it's like, you know, if I sign a guy like, let's say, Russell Westbrook, and he has 2 years left on his deal, I can stretch it out over like 6 years and it won't count against my cap.
You feel like that should be something periodic?
I think you should be allowed to do it no matter what, because at the end of the day, like, you're still paying that money as a team, right? It's just not counting against your cap.
Huh.
So then, I mean, you could look at it and it's like, okay, well, then you shouldn't make that many bad decisions. We're like letting you off.
Right, that's what I'm saying.
But at the same time, it's like, how many teams are like going to sign like a bunch of dudes and then just be like, okay, we got to cut them all now because they don't work, and then sign a bunch of other guys. So then they're essentially paying all that luxury tax money. It's just now those guys aren't playing for them any longer.
Oh. I think they're just going to be – how they handle that is going to be very key, because the owners are like – people who are connected in the league, until like the owners are like legitimately pissed at the Warriors and the Clippers and the Nets. It's like they're pissed at the amount of money they're putting into the
luxury. Then they have to spend more money.
Right. That's it. Or they look funny. My thing is this. When Wiggins was up, that contract was considered nonsense.
Yep.
The Warriors, you know, moved D'Lo to get him. Everybody laughed like, Wiggins not going to fit in that culture. They want to win. It worked, or he won't fit. Ends up being their second best player on a championship team.
Yep.
And then now people are pissed because they're not going to get a chance to sign him because he, you know.
Just take left.
Yeah, right. Jordan Poole looked like. But year two, I kid you not, but I don't know if you were in Northern California second year. I know you move around. You moved a couple times. He was legitimately on his way out the league, Jordan Poole. Yeah. Like, literally was going to be out. Like, he was one of the worst.
He was players. Nice at Michigan, though.
Yeah. It's just, they developed him. You know what I mean? So, like, I don't think you can punish it. You shouldn't punish it. Like, Jordan Poole should not be counting against the Warriors' luxury tax, in my opinion. Like, reward teams for having a good basketball people in their front office.
Yeah, I mean, I don't disagree with that. I think they should all just be able to spend as much money as they please.
Soccer, what you say? That have to do with in soccer?
Yeah, in baseball.
Yeah, soccer and baseball. There's no luxury tax in baseball. I thought that just like some type of competitive tax.
It's like after $200 million, like, you know, that's a lot of money.
Yeah, so okay. Yeah, we'll see. I mean, the people were talking about like, well, then you get rid of parity. I was like, well, we just saw LeBron James go to the finals for a decade straight, and you know, parity's a.
And baseball has like more parity than any other sport. We have not had a repeat champion in baseball since the Yankees. And that's a sport where you could spend as much money as you want. And the most expensive team, the team that spends the most money, hardly ever wins.
Yeah, I think it's a little different. So I'll say this in regards to basketball, you know, related to football and baseball. One player probably impacts a team more so in basketball, more so than the other two sports, because you play both ways in basketball. You can affect the game on both sides. Baseball, you bat once every three innings. You know what I mean? You might play right field or left field. Even if the dominant pitchers pitch every 5 days. You know what I mean? So football, quarterback, you got to get off the field. Your defense has to get stops for you to win. You know what I mean? Receivers got to get open. So I think that's a little bit different, but I get the concept of what you're saying, though.
But we're also seeing a new age in basketball where the whole paying three guys max money isn't really working anymore.
I think you need two stars and you need to build the team with very good role players. I think that's a much more, you know, sustainable way to build a team.
That's true. Or just spend a lot of money like the Warriors.
Yeah. All right, man. Let's just before we get out of here, it's early. Teams that most have played seven games. Real quick, I need your top five in each conference right now.
All right, so top five, I'll start with the East. I'm going to go number one. I'm still going to put Boston number one just because, like, you know, they were the best team last year. I do think defensively early on this season, they are a lot worse than last year. Like, they got to figure some things out.
They miss Rob Williams tremendously.
Yeah, and I also think they miss Ime Udoka because – they just don't have the same buy-in defensively early on. Right now I'm going to put them number one, but depending, it's probably going to go down a little bit if they continue playing like this. Number two, I'm going to put Milwaukee 5-0 against the spread. Number one defensive team in the league so far, but they've also haven't played an extremely tough schedule yet. So we'll see how things go. But, I mean, whenever you have 34 on the floor, You always got a chance. Number three, I'm gonna put Cleveland. 5-1 on the season. Just an excellent defensive team and the number one 3-point shooting team in the league right now. So I'm gonna put Cleveland there. Number four. This is where it gets tricky, dude. Because I feel like there's like six teams I could put in the next two spots. I'm gonna go. I can't believe I'm saying this. I can't go the Knicks, dude. I'm gonna go the Knicks number four for right now. Just because they're 3-3, they've lost to three good teams. Their three losses, they've lost.
Their schedule's been tough. Yeah.
They've lost to the Bucks, Grizzlies, and Cavaliers, who I think are all obviously three really good teams. And then number five, I'm gonna put Toronto.
Ooh, we have – okay, so we got the same thing, except Milwaukee's one for me because I think Rob Williams is totally missed the ball. I got Milwaukee, Boston, Cleveland, and then I got Atlanta four. And then I'm going to go with
– see, Atlanta's had, like, the easiest schedule,
though. Yeah, I'll go with that Atlanta four and then Toronto five for me. That's where – for me. That's my five. But I get what you're saying with the strength of schedule. I just think I love Atlanta's – I'm not the hugest Trae Young fan, but I think DeJounte is a good fit for him because he will defend and it gives a chance to Trae to get. Trae has tremendous off ball offensive numbers.
He does.
Like the spot up shooting and movement shooting. So I think DeJounte gives him a great chance to unlock that. So I put Atlanta four for now and then the Knicks at Toronto at five.
Yeah, I like Toronto going forward. Like, I think they're going to be a top.
Same, yep, same. I think Siakam's playing out of his mind right now.
Yeah. their lack of size, like, because they have, like, a bunch of 6'7 guys, like, and they have, a lack of size. What really was, like, weird to me was that they dominated the Sixers with Embiid on the floor, and then without Embiid, the Sixers dominated them.
Yeah, that was crazy. Yeah, that was crazy how that worked out. That was just I think it's one of those things. Like over the regular season, some stuff happens, but I think that type of stuff will normalize as the season goes.
I agree.
Goes forward. Give me your top five in the West.
All right, in the West, I'm gonna go Pelicans number one.
Ooh, spot number one.
Yeah, number one. They're the best team when healthy. And even without Zion and Brandon Ingram, they're still competitive. They still manage to win basketball games. Number two, I'm going to go Phoenix for now just because they take every regular season game like game seven of the playoffs, which, I mean, we could say what we want, but it doesn't mean, like at the end of the day, we're only going to judge this team on the playoffs, but they legitimately play every game like it's a playoff game. Number three, I'm going to go with Dallas. I know that they have a losing record right now. Yeah, I know they have a losing
record. They won today, so they got the 3-3.
That's right. They're 3-3. But statistically, they're a top three team. Like, they're one of the best defensive teams, and they're one of the best efficient offensive teams as well. Number four, I'm going to go with the Warriors just because they aren't playing any defense right now, but I think it could be them just going through the woes. And then
here's my thing with that. So I thought about that too. Then I really watched the last few games on that team, bro. So Looney's your post defender, Draymond will guard guys, Wiggins will guard guys. Aside from those three, who on that team would you call a plus defender?
On the Warriors?
Yeah.
Oh, nobody.
That is my only, like, that's my only reason I think it could be an issue going forward. I think you can say this, like, Otto Porter, defend it. You know, GP2, defend it. You know what I mean? So my thing is.
But Dante DiVincenzo is a good defender, but he's hurt.
Yeah, they like, and even the games he played, he wasn't defending well. I don't know if it's he figuring out what the Warriors like to do scheme-wise, a little different than what, you know, his last two stops. Sacramento didn't just, you know, decided defense didn't matter. So maybe he's got used to that, but he wasn't great when he played. So the Warriors are going to have to figure out how to connect defensively without great individual defenders like they had last year. And I think that'll be the hurdle. Also, aside from Moody, sorry, I sound like Perk right there. None of their young guys are ready to play serious NBA basketball right now. Like Wiseman, offensively, he's helpful. He's a cone drill on defense. He's very little resistance. Kuminga is probably one I'm disappointed because he has elite physical tools to be the defender. He's just so. The reports are he's not doing what they want him to do as far as development with the ball handling and skill work and just being and just, you know, learning how to play the game the way the Warriors play. So that's why he's kind of in a doghouse. Kerr mentioned it. He was like, he's not playing a lot, and I want him to be pissed about that and change how he is. So Kerr, like, has alluded to it. Like, he's got to be better to play. They're playing a two-way guy ahead of Kuminga right now.
Yeah. Awesome.
So I think that is the Warriors' issue. Their young guys are going to have to learn outside of Moody are going to have to contribute because, you know, you let other guys go to you know, the tax bill was already insane. Had to let GP2 go. Was going to be even worse. Yeah. Otto was a one-year rental. You know what I mean? With an exception. So those young guys are going to have to figure out how to play basketball. I think Kerr is a great enough coach. Like, they'll figure it out as the season goes on, but their regular season record might not be indicative of who they truly are because they might lose some games having to get guys up to snuff. So that's my tidbit on the Warriors.
No, I mean, that's all great. That's all fair points. Yeah. And it's a long season. You know what I mean? Like, I just got them fourth right now. And then number five, I'm going to put Memphis there.
Oh, so no Portland, huh?
Not going to put Portland there yet. I do think that, especially because Dame's hurt right now.
That's fair. That's fair. So I went Phoenix number one. I just think their continuity, they just understand how to play together. Like, they have very little change. Only thing, they took Jay Crowder out, and I think it was time for Cameron Johnson to start anyway.
Yeah,
given his development, I'm going to go with New Orleans too. Again, Zion came back today, was dominant against the Clippers. B.I. is coming back when they get back from this road trip. I know he's upset he can't play against the Lakers. I know he loves that game, so he'll miss the Laker game. I got them too. Gonna go with. Man, I got to go with San Antonio 3 for right now. Like, it's fluid. It'll probably drop when reality sets in, but they're playing too well. They beat Minnesota. They've beaten some teams who, you know, we think are good. So I'll go mini there. I'll go Denver 4, awful loss tonight to the Lakers. But right now I'll say this. If their playoffs were to start today, I would pick Denver. Just based on what I've seen early. Huh?
To win it all?
No, to come out the West.
Oh, okay.
If I just think it's just it's obviously seven games in, but they seem the most connected.
Over New Orleans, though?
Just the experience. Yeah. The experience. But I think right now, New Orleans, but Denver is just, yeah.
Trey Murphy, number one. Effective shooting percentage in the league right now, 77%.
Yeah, he's a steal at pick 16. And then five, I'll go Golden State off the championship spec ahead of Memphis. But yeah, going. I'm not liking what I'm seeing at all from the Warriors. I'm very curious to see how their young guys react to what the team needs them to do. Jordan, tell us your Twitter handle where they can follow you.
You can follow me at JordanRulesTSP. You can go to www.taproomsportspodcast.com. You can find me there.
All right, man. Jordan will be here the next few episodes. Like, I'm cycling him in and out. We will be continuing to talk NBA next few weeks, as always. Follow me on Twitter, JJMibbles55_MST. Subscribe and follow the pod. It's the first one. We are back. We appreciate you guys for tapping in. And we are out of here.
Let's go. Peace. We'll be right back.